following material was performed under extreme mental duress and lack of prescribed medication.
You know, there's a lot more to comedy than what you hear on the stage.
I like the idea of comedy at night. Rule number one, attack the audience verbally.
You know, my friends laughed when I started doing comedy, and nobody's laughing now.
I emptied my case. They didn't boo me or anything. It's just every time I came out from behind the case, another 10 people had left. Man, I was ready to hang myself. I'm not kidding, man. I measured the light cord in the room and everything.
It's The Green Room, a program by comics, with comics, where we talk about everything. And it's starting right now. Hey, everybody. You have made it once again. It's The Green Room. I am Phil Most, your host. Thank you very much for listening. This is the Anchor Podcast on greenroomradio.net, where you can go find a bunch of other podcasts by comedians. And that's all we have on greenroomradio.net. This is the longest running and largest podcast on stand-up comedy on the internet, and we're glad that you found us again. It's a show about comics that you might never have heard of before that are out there doing work every week, making people laugh, traveling from town to town. And they just like doing it. They want to be famous. They want to be rich. They want to be well known. Well, that's the same as famous, isn't it? Maybe infamous? Nah, probably not. But it's about their hopes, dreams, struggles, failures, a little bit of everything. What it takes to be a stand-up comic these days. This guy's second time on the show. It's Mark Ryan, who was on the show, I think, in 2010 or 2009. Back then, he had just finished filming a video, a country music video, where he was out in the cold in just his tighty-whities and almost froze to death, poor guy, because that's what we do to make money. But Mark's a great example of a guy that's doing some very interesting things to make himself known. And in particular, every once in a while we talk about YouTube, you know, and how it relates to stand-up comedy these days. And Mark is a great example of somebody who's had some real success on YouTube. He created a character called Steve that went viral. Basically, it was him on a lawnmower getting pulled over by a policeman and getting in trouble for drunk driving on his lawnmower. And I mean, he made this thing so hilarious, but yet it was so believable that it was actually played on CNN and a bunch of other legit TV shows. They thought it was real. Well, one thing led to another, and he didn't get in any trouble because he wasn't trying to fake anybody out. It was obviously, you know, he was trying to spoof things, but it gave him some, you know, credibility early on. Is a guy that had an idea and could follow it through and make it into something that was worthwhile, that people were going to actually watch. You know, and aside from doing these videos, he's an incredibly talented and funny stand-up comic that tours relentlessly. Now, this YouTube thing, I have no doubts, gave him a pathway into Hollywood and some other television shows. Now, he's not on NBC or that. He's on some of what I think we used to call them extended basic cable channels. But he's got two shows that are running on cable right now. One on the Outdoor Channel called Mudslingers. And he's got another show called Drinking Made Easy. And they were both shows that were produced a while back, but they're still being played. And we talk about how these kind of shows actually do have a much longer life than the stuff that may have happened even 20 years ago. So he's a real good testament to a guy that's kind of cutting his own path into building an audience and fan base, that kind of thing. The road thing's so damn hard anymore anyway. It's not getting any easier. Just keeps getting a little more.
No, it's certainly not. I really, you know, I love this business more than anything else. I don't want to do anything else, but I don't. I'm sit back and I'm confused and I don't understand what's happening to the business, and yet I'm excited about what's happening. So there's a lot of positive changes, and there's a lot of, like, scary changes. Because, you know, I look at young guys starting, and I'm like, how do they even make this work to get momentum? You know, because the plane fares have continued to go up, the money to travel, you know, just expenses across the board, and yet club, you know, the amount that clubs pay is continued to stagnate, if not go down. And, you know, they've got a really convenient excuse of that the economy's struggling and everybody's struggling and we're struggling. And, you know, yeah, that's true. But, like, it was already horrific pay to begin with, and now you're going down from there while everything else is going up. I just don't know how anybody who's starting or wants to start this goes about it, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, when I started, as probably I – when you did, I went out and did some serious touring as an opening act. And I don't know if you were able to do that when you started, but I did 2 years in a row that I did like 30 years plus, most of it opening work, couching it.
Oh, yeah. And I did too. But, you know, I had the convenience of the fact that I was in college at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, fortunate enough to have my family helping me with school and expenses and stuff. So I had a little bit of breathing room to kind of experiment and get some momentum without having it be my full-time job. But, you know, I see a lot of guys who don't have those luxuries or benefits, and they just want to do comedy. And I you know, I don't know how that. And even myself and guys like Todd Yon who want to continue to do it in clubs, but, you know, how do we make this make sense? And the exciting side is you can make a name for yourself on the internet, and you can make money on the internet, and you can release comedy albums directly on the internet. And so there's all these other financial opportunities that are opening up, but they're so different from what it was when I started comedy, what it was when you started comedy, where it didn't, none of that stuff mattered. It all, the only thing that matters is going to the clubs and getting your name known in those clubs. Get the bookers to know who you are so you can go around and get gigs and all this stuff. That was everything, you know. And now it's like, does that even matter? Is that even part of it anymore, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And you know, the other big thing, and I hate to put it down to something this basic, but the gas price is just killing guys that are trying to start out. Because when I started, I lived in Colorado, and I used to, for example, work South Bend, and it was a 1,200-mile trip back and forth. I got paid $300 for the week, and it cost me $120 to get there, back and forth. Now,
yeah,
it's three. It now it's the it, it's the full $300 goes out if you want to go to South Bend.
Yeah, and so then it becomes about, you're just doing it because you absolutely love it and you have to do it. And then you have to get some other job to support the fact that you just love to do this. And,
yeah,
you know, like I said, then you get guys who love to do it so much and are young and creative. And then they turn to the internet and you create something like a Bo Burnham who, you know, he's the extreme example, but, you know, he created a following in his house. So he didn't have to go out and sleep on couches, and he didn't have to do that. And then once the following was big enough, then he went out and toured, you know? And I'm wondering if that'll have to be the role model for financial success in the future, you know?
Well, yeah, and I you know, did you, are you familiar with that dude that's, they did an article on that's making over $1 million a year on YouTube?
Yeah, I've seen him before, and it didn't surprise me. There's a couple of guys that I've met in Los Angeles, and this isn't all too unique anymore, where people are forming production groups, you know, young guys like that, like who have success, pooling together their resources, cameras, computers,
yeah,
props, stuff like that, and helping each other out. So I've met quite a few people who've figured out a way, and, you know, to make that kind of money, you really got to feed that machine every day. You really got to do that. Those are the guys that that make a lot of money is the ones that do that. And I heard somebody saying, a comedian or some celebrity on a talk show recently, that the days of making $35 million or $40 million on a television show, on a sitcom or whatever, is over. That you might be able to make, you know, a million or two online as a celebrity, you know, online, but it's so fragmented, everything, entertainment, that it's not, you know. Remember back when Tim Allen was the star of Home Improvement in his last season? I don't know if you recall this, but he made $5 million an episode.
Yeah, the same as the Friends guys and the Seinfeld, yeah, that, bunch, all those guys.
And they're saying, and I think they're right, you know, that'll never happen again, ever, because the advertising dollars and whatnot and the viewing audience is too fragmented.
Well, yeah, and you also come along with the way that we're getting television delivered anymore. Now, I know I'm substantially older than you, and I wish I wasn't, Mark, but I am. And when I grew up, I literally grew up with the three channels, and the season was, you know, started in September, ended in April. Maybe they took 1 week off here or there. There were bunches of TV shows, very captive audiences. Now TV's migrated to the point where it's, you know, six episodes and then a three-week break or a two-month break, and then they'd stretch it out for the same period of time, but it's not anywhere near the number of episodes. So,
yeah, they can't afford it, you know. So
no,
less and less has become the norm.
Yep.
And then the other thing that's crazy, that when you compare it to when we were younger, is, you know, as we're talking about stand-up, my focus to increase my exposure as a stand-up comedian and sell more tickets was always to get on television. That was the thing.
Right.
You got to get on television to sell more tickets. So, you know, over the course of my career, I've been able to get a few hits here and there with comedy specials, and then hosting or co-hosting this show on HDNet for 24 episodes, which is pretty significant when we're talking about how they're only making six. So we did 24 of Drinking Made Easy, and then I just did the 13 of Mudslingers.
Right.
And it does not have the same effect that it used to. It used to have an effect. But now what happens is when I tell people I host a television show, the first thing I'm often asked is, can I watch it online? Where is it online?
Really?
And it's, you know, it's maddening to me, because just a few years ago, right before I started getting all this television opportunities and whatnot, the internet was still looked at as kind of like, oh, it's on the internet. Oh, it must be, yeah, it must be bad, or it must be below par, or
yeah,
not as good if it's on the internet. But now people just look to say, where is it on the internet? Like, you know, the internet's where everything is. So, you know, it's not bad or good or anything. It's the portal. It's the pipeline for everything.
Well, and that's true. And honestly, I abandoned cable TV because, you know, I was basically paying for it and never home, because I'm on the road a lot. And I've watched all my television on my computer for the past 2 years. In fact, even
yeah,
here's how bad it is, Mark. I live in a house now that has satellite, so I got like the 300 channels or whatever on the Dish Network and that. I bet I don't even watch TV. Still, I'm so in the habit of watching it on online that I don't even go sit in the living room and watch.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah,
weird, huh?
I'm kind of living the same life as well. I had DirecTV. I was paying $100-something a month, and I was like, this is ridiculous. So we canceled it, and we watch all of our programming on Amazon,
uh-huh,
video on demand, instant video, and Netflix and Hulu and all the sources like you're watching.
Yep.
And the great thing, the way I look at it is, if I was spending $100-something a month on DirecTV,
yeah,
well, that means that's how much, if I keep my budget the same, that's how much I have to spend on videos to download or series or whatever I want to watch that month.
Yeah.
And I haven't spent that much yet, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't you know, because I find the shows I want to watch on Amazon, and they're airing right now. You know, they're, so I'm not missing, I'm not behind. You know, they're on FX, and I pay $1.99 for them, but at the end of the month, I've paid $6 for four shows or whatever, you know, or $8 or whatever it is, you know?
Well, and in all fairness, I mean, I don't condone this, folks, but, you know, I'm always late to the party. I seem to find everything after it's almost done. But you can get any show online without even paying for it on multiple sites out there. It's,
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Which I think kind of, it kind of fucks somebody like you that's, you know, working hard on a series and, you know, trying to make something because they don't get the money for advertising. There's no residual checks. So,
yeah, I mean, I do feel like they're, you know, I know that for a fact you can get anything anywhere. My roommate's the king of that. He has all these sites, you know, we can watch this movie that just came out. But, you know, even though I know that, it's still a little bit of a hassle, you know, just enough of a hassle for somebody like me where I just want to, I want to click one button and I want to watch it, you know, and that's, Amazon is great for that. And plus it stores it, you know, you can go back and watch it again or pick up or, you know, it just makes things easier. So I still think there's enough of a hassle that the average person is going to go, you know, and that was the thing that I think Louis C.K. proved with his experiment. And I'm so glad that somebody at that level was willing to do an experiment. And I'm sure you're familiar with it, but
yeah,
for those who aren't, where he put a special online, he made a special, put it online, and he asked people not to steal it, like we're talking about. Don't go and hack it from a website or whatever. Give me, you know, $5 for it, and it worked. And I'm sure a lot of people did steal it, but
sure,
still, it worked enough that it justified the venture, you know?
Well, absolutely, and, you know, it's kind of funny. Whenever I read, you know how it is when you read something, you read it, you hear their voice in your head if you've heard their voice enough. I could just hear him going, yeah, don't steal it because, you know, the way he talks. Like, don't be an asshole and steal this. So you
yeah.
Can't. But it's...
Come on. Yeah, don't fuck me. Yeah.
It's just fantastic. But it is. I followed that very closely. And I think something like that can give real hope for a lot of guys, you know, that do and can self-produce. I mean, we're all...
Yeah.
We all have a tendency to be resourceful in those kind of situations, and for him to be able to get out there and do it, and he's been very open about how he made all that money off of that one, but yet if he'd have gotten the same amount of money in sales when he went through regular distribution, he basically would have nearly broke even, maybe a little bit better.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what a guy like that makes from HBO, but I could probably guess, you know, if he would have just went the standard route and said, hey, let's do a special, I would guess they would probably give Louis something like $250,000 for a finished product. Now, that means he has to go and spend some of that money to make it. And in his case, he likes production, so he spends a lot. You know, I mean, that's the way it works with guys that get specials from Comedy Central and whatnot. If it's a decent level special, they'll give you $100,000, but then you have to deliver the product. So you might spend, you know, 90 on the thing and only make, you know, 10 or whatever. So then of course you get DVD sales and all that stuff, and you hope, you know, you get some exposure and all that. But what he did is completely fucking different. I mean, he turned an hour into $1 million in 10 days. That's amazing. You know,
right.
Amazing.
And he gave back. Did you see him on Fallon when he told what he did with the money?
Yeah. And I think that was really interesting too. You know, I mean, I don't know what people think how much money Louis has, but I mean, just from knowing the comedy world enough, I think we both know he's got plenty of money.
Yeah.
I mean, he paid for that special with the ticket sales. And
right.
The special was very expensive to produce. So if he's touring at that level of income, then, yeah, I think it's pretty cool he gave some of the money away because he's already got a significant amount of money. Now, if he didn't have that, I would have been like, what are you doing? Giving all that money away.
Yeah, you're not as smart as we thought you were.
What's that?
You're not as smart as we thought you were, Louis.
Yeah, yeah. But it is cool. It is cool. And the transparency is amazing and wonderfully inspiring to guys like myself. And additionally, like I said, to see somebody take that risk who's at that level was amazing and an awesome thing, because what it tells me, and I think it should tell the executives and the suits that run a lot of decisions in this business, is that the audience is ready to go wherever the content is.
Right.
It used to be people would just feel more comfortable through an iTunes or, something that they knew. But now, like Louis saying, it's only here, it's only on this website, but he still sold so much. To me, it showed people don't care. They know how to, they're tech savvy enough now. They know how to take it out of their computer and put it on their phone, even though it's not from iTunes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they do. And you know, we're lucky. We're in an area. I mean, every era of the comedy business has had their, you know, their forerunners, you know, and the guys that are really out there ahead of everything. But I think, you know, you look at Louis C.K. and he's one of them. I would put Mark Maron in there. With what he's doing to him, and actually him and I'm having a hard time calling Adam Carolla a comic, and I think he'd even have a hard time saying that. I mean, he does stand-up comedy, but he doesn't self-identify as one, you know?
Right.
He if you ever listen to his podcast, he basically say, I'm a guy that I know how to be funny, and I go do stand-up. But he's all but said I'm not a comic. But I think those guys are doing more for this kind of platform, Greg Proops and guys like that who are really getting out there. So we've got a couple guys that are really pushing the envelopes of how we can go out and how we can be seen as comedians. And then, you know, the whole Facebook thing, I saw that you were trying something kind of new on that I haven't seen a lot of guys doing. I've seen it limited, but you start a fan page to see if you could drum up some interest in Chattanooga, Tennessee, right?
Yeah, it's actually Knoxville. And
Knoxville. Yeah,
It was just what you described. It was the thought of, as we talked about earlier in the conversation, the clubs and the pay and how difficult that is. So my thought was, you know, if you can cut the middleman out, and this is kind of what I think Louis is trying to do with a lot of what he's doing, and it's not a unique thought. I hear a lot of comics trying really hard to figure out how to use technology to cut out as much people in between. Doug Stanhope does a really good job with this, you know, selling and promoting his own shows and just going around the standard, you know, comedy clubs. He does, you know what he does.
But, right, he's doing rock clubs.
You know,
he does a lot of rock clubs. He just picks a place, finds a club, makes his arrangements, and then sells his show out, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's good. You know, he's got enough recognition. So my thought was, you know, in a market where I know I've been before or I know I've done good at, Knoxville was a good experiment idea because I'd been there with Rodney Carrington when I was on tour with Rodney, and we played to about 4,000 people there. So I thought, maybe if I could get just a few of those people out and whatnot, and I don't need a lot, and we could charge a minimal amount, we could do a show, and I don't have to fuss with the comedy club, and I can just come in for one night instead of, you know, five or six or whatever.
Sure.
So that was the concept, and simple, you know, and so now it just becomes a matter of how do you promote that? You know, the infrastructure is in place, you know, with Facebook, you can use a page and gather everybody up and inform them as to the date and whatnot, but then it's how do you get the word out? And I'm experimenting with a little bit of Facebook advertising and trying to get the people who are connected to me in Knoxville to spread it around. But, you know, anymore, it's unless you're a really well-known name that people recognize, it's really hard to sell hard tickets. You know, it's just really hard to sell them. I'm hearing that from comedy clubs, you know, from people that I like and trust that run clubs in this business are saying things like, no white comics, no white guy comics are selling tickets anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
but
some of the black guys who come through do good. There's a few that of the young white guys that are on Chelsea Handler that come through and do good. But for the most part, nobody is selling tickets, even guys who once did draw in people. And that, again, I don't know if this comes back to the economy or people just don't have extra money, but it's really difficult. So even trying something experimental like Facebook, you know, is a challenge. But you got to do something, you know?
Well, dude, I actually, and I've made my thoughts very well known on this, so anybody that listens to some of my private stuff, they'll know this, but I blame the comedy club industry on the lack of ticket sales because years ago they changed their model. They changed from we're going to make everybody pay to we're going to give away tickets. And even though it's not a direct comparison, I use it all the time, I think if movie theater owners would have done the same thing, they'd be in the same position, you know, because we wouldn't be going to – nobody would be going to movie theaters either. If they could get a ticket for free.
You wouldn't expect to pay for it. You would think, well, they're going to make money off of me on the popcorn and sodas, so why do they need to, you know. You would have that same mentality the comedy club people have. They're going to make money off of our drink sales.
Right, right. And yeah. Everybody bitches. Everybody bitches about how much popcorn is, and everybody bitches about how much they pay for their soda. But you know what? It doesn't stop them from going. Now, you know, sales are down because the economy's a little bit light, but the truth is, or maybe I've understated, it's probably more than a little bit light, but it's still, they held their guns.
Well, also in the movie business this year, specifically, you know, the movies have been horrific. We're starting to finally see this year, I think, the results of the strike, the writer's strike that we had a few years before that. If you go back and track back in time, we had a pretty significant writer strike, which just, you know, left a big hole in production in Hollywood. So, you know, now a few years later, we're just, I think, seeing some of the, I mean, this year was shitty for movies. Moneyball, what's his name? The guy in Moneyball got nominated for an Academy Award.
Wahlberg? Is that? Oh no, no Brad Pitt.
Moneyball was Brad Pitt. What's the young kid's name? I can't remember. But somebody told me it just the indicators by the nominations and stuff showed me like, wow, they didn't really have a lot to pick from. And I already felt that. I already felt that about this year's movie. So I think that has something to do with the movie sales being down as well, but definitely giving away comedy tickets had a huge impact, you know, and some clubs have never recovered from that. If you know that from traveling around, if you go around the country, some clubs, that's just the way it is for them from now on out because people aren't going to ever pay for their tickets again.
Dude, they fed the monster, you know, is what they did. They got people conditioned to show no value in the product itself. I mean, I knew of a club that actually they started giving away tickets and they had people that would come every week. And they came every week for, this is how bad the mentality is. They came every week for a year, 2 years. I mean, they were real regular. And then finally the club decided to make them pay for water. They would give them glasses of water because these guys wouldn't even buy drinks, so they'd give them a cup full of water. And when they got to the point where they started selling bottled water in the club, these guys refused to go because they were unwilling to pay for a bottle of water.
Yeah.
Somebody was putting entertainment on the stage for them, keeping the doors open.
I was just going to say the interesting psychological effect that the average comedy club goer who's listening to this who may not know or understand, the comics well understand it, and I'm afraid I don't know if the comedy clubs understand it, but I know you get it, and the effect is that people don't care about the product as much. You have a lesser quality audience when you give away the tickets. Anytime I've worked with somebody who had an expensive ticket price, like Rodney Carrington or any other celebrity acts that I've worked with over the years, when you have to pay $20 a ticket, you have a lot of respect for the show, for the evening, for the comedy, and it just makes for a better experience for everybody. But when you don't have any respect for it because you didn't pay for it and it doesn't mean anything to you, you're so willing to shit on it and heckle or just, you know, not care about it or treat it as something that's not special. And it's really fascinating to me that just charging something or giving away something has that psychological effect.
Well, yeah, and I was, I mean, this isn't comedy, this isn't a comedy guy, but I was talking to a guy who's an attorney today. And he said when he had his rate, he was just doing it kind of part-time, and he was charging $100 an hour to be an attorney. He said he constantly had to justify his rate. Everybody was asking him, why do you think you're worth $100 an hour? And then he turned around and raised it to $400, and nobody ever asks him anymore, and he actually has more business. Because they automatically think it's good. You know? So
we've
taken all the value. The clubs have taken all the value out of comedy. I totally blame them. I understand that they were doing something that they felt was out of desperation, and nobody likes to see themselves backslide as far as the numbers things go. But I think they were paying attention to the wrong numbers, and they shouldn't have worried about the number of people coming in. They should have worried about the number of people that were paying.
Yeah, and there's like in my hometown, they do this thing where they're constantly giving away 15 free tickets for your birthday at the comedy club or whatever on the radio. And so, and I've heard people talk about this when they come in, where they get so many free tickets stockpiled up for birthdays or giveaways or whatever. And the way these comedy clubs do this is they keep giving out tickets to people who have come, because that's how it works. They fill out a little card when they come. And so these people who are regulars at the club have so many free tickets, they just don't even want to go. They're like, you know, they just become apathetic to it because they're like, we can go whenever we want. We have all these free tickets.
Yeah, well.
You know, it doesn't become special anymore. So,
that's
the thing that I'll, you know, go back to earlier in our conversation. It's really confusing and scary, and where is this going? And then the other side is the internet, you know, and what's happening with that? Like, I'm starting to explore more shows that broadcast live. I think that's a fascinating concept. You know, I used to be kind of leery of it, but now it's like, wait, I can do a show in Ventura, you know, down at the beach by my house, and it goes out to everybody who follows me at once. That's pretty cool, you know?
It is. It's fantastic.
And the technology is now so good that they can sit and watch it in high def and sounds good, you know?
Yeah, so. It is good. And speaking of that, I want to ask you, not taking away from anything you do otherwise, but is Steve still the biggest thing you've kind of done on the internet? I mean, because you're doing new stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely. And the way I've started to approach it is I've let Steve kind of take on his own. You know, I used to try and use that because it was born out of material that was in my act. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, I used to do this character a lot in my first album. I've had three albums out and starting work on writing a fourth. And in my first album, I did a lot of this character named Steve. And he's popped in my other albums here and there. But it was just such a popular character, I took it to the internet, and now it's exploded. And people like him so much that they become angry, disappointed, confused when they find out it's me. And so I think it's more fun to let people live out the idea of whatever they have about this character and they like him so much, so I've started to kind of separate myself and let Steve be his own persona and character on the internet, and people follow him on Facebook, and it's pretty exciting.
Well, it is exciting. Do you see that as a, you know, a Larry the Cable Guy kind of thing, like where you actually will, you'll have to jump the rail and become Steve to kind of move to that next plateau? You know what I'm saying?
No, not at all. The way I see it is more of a Sacha Baron Cohen route.
Okay. All right.
Whereby, you know, I'm doing so many different things with the TV shows, Mudslingers, and like I said, we're developing a new concept about Rednecks at Large for the Outdoor Channel, and so I see it more as like I said, it's, I'm letting it, instead of keeping it connected to me, Steve is in a, you know, becoming a persona all to its own, and that's the way he will exist. I won't ever be Steve on stage doing stand-up, but there is a Steve series in development where you'll get to see, like, his day-to-day life,
yeah,
and what's going on with him, and his wife, and the antics he gets involved in, and that'll be downloadable for, just like all this other content we're talking about, $1.99 an episode.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And it won't be censored, because it's not going to be on network television, so it's going to be as wild and as out of control as it possibly can. And so that will exist all by itself, and I'll continue to host shows and work on other projects. I'm pretty excited. Right now I'm in the finishing stages of a project that I'll hopefully release by the end of this month called Blacked Out.
Okay.
And it's a series of videos kind of in the vein of The Incredible Hulk, whereby when I'm challenged as a white guy, I turn into a black man. And it's pretty funny. It's simple scenarios, little short videos for the internet, but it's like, the, you know, an example is one is in the bank, and I play a really meek, you know, mild white, you know, these fees are really upsetting, sir. Could you please help me with removing some of these bank fees? And they just, you know, banks are shitty and they fee you to death. And when he's relentlessly being an asshole, I turn into a black guy and cuss him out, get all my money back.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And we have six episodes of that. So to kind of bring it back around, you know, the Steve thing is certainly not going to be the only thing. You know, Larry the Cable Guy, you know, of course, his real name is Dan Whitney. That was a big decision. I mean, that was a great decision for him.
Sure.
To commit to that and to really become that person. I mean, it's fascinating to me because I've met him early in his career when he still kind of was Dan. And since then, I've seen, you know, videos of him where he wasn't performing. It was like a cell phone video backstage or off stage, and he was still Larry. And so it, in my mind, it meant like he like really gave his entire life to that.
Right, right.
Everything, you
right.
know. And that's just not who I am. I love playing the character, Steve, but it's just a character, you know. It's just, it's one of many things which I have fun doing, and that's the way it'll continue to be.
So you kind of want to take the Paul Rubens route without the getting caught in the club masturbating.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Okay. And I hope, you know, my hope is, I mean, I'm not trying to be a character actor, I don't think, but my hope is that I have a few more Steve's characters that are that specifically designed and exciting for people, you know, and
yeah.
But that's just, you know, the cool thing about the internet. You can explore all that stuff relatively inexpensively and see what people latch onto, you know. And I mean, it becomes undeniable when millions of people respond to something. Then you know you've got something that has value.
Yeah, know? and also I want to ask, now it's obvious all these ideas are coming from you. How much help do you need to put them all into, you know, all into play? I mean, do you have a kind of a team of guys that you all started out together and you're maturing this whole thing together? Or have you picked people up as you've gone?
No, just kind of picking up things as I go. You know, I, you know, from a young age, I've always just, you know, make it happen. You know, whatever you got to do, get borrow a camera from this guy and ask that guy if he'll help you right there. And, you know, just whatever. My motto has always been just whatever it takes to get it done, you know. And that requires kind of being an asshole sometimes and pushing people uncomfortably and trying to stretch money as far as you can, you know. I mean, in the last series of videos we made for Steve, there was a helicopter involved in a high-speed chase. I didn't have permission to do any of that or, you know, didn't get like a really high-end helicopter. We got like a crop dusting helicopter. So you just kind of make it work however you can, as cheap as you can, just to get it done, you know.
Well, Mark's a very talented guy. If you want to find out more about him, you can go to markryan.com, and he spells Mark, MarkRyan.com. YouTube, it's youtube.com/MarkRyan, and that'll get you to some of his videos, but there are also links at that particular address that'll get you to his other YouTube channels for Steve and some other stuff that he's doing. He's also got a Twitter account, which I'm pretty sure is Funny Mark Ryan. I'm going to have to do a little more investigation. You need to go to the website, greenroomradio.net, for that link. And any others that I might put on to his television shows, or maybe even the Steve video. We'll see what ends up on there. But I appreciate you guys listening. Now, I'm not even sure where Steve's at this week. I probably should have looked that up if I was going to be a nice guy. So let me see if I can look it up here real fast while we're talking and see where his appearances are. I am at markryan.com right now as we speak, and it is going to be June the 5th. He's going to be at JR's Comedy Club in Valencia, California, the 6th and the 7th. You'll be able to see him on a Friday and Saturday night. Now, I know that's not you folks there in Tucson. In Tucson, you're going to be seeing Brian Ricci, and he's a good comic, too. He's out of Phoenix, and he's dropping down to Tucson to do the shows there for the weekend, and because of some, you know, scheduling issues, we were not able to connect up. So, for those of you that are up by Valencia, California, go see Mark. You will not be disappointed. He's a fantastic comic. And like I tell you guys, you need to see your comedy live. That's the way it's supposed to be done. If you cannot make it to either Laughs Comedy Club this weekend, or if you can't make it to see Mark at JR's Comedy Club, please go to a comedy club near you. Thanks for listening.